Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Last week, Governor Larry Hogan had harsh words for the city of Baltimore and its health department. We begin today with Dr. Letitia Geraza, the city's health commissioner, for an update on efforts to address inequity in vaccine distribution. Plus, the best-selling author Anne Lamott has a new book on revival and courage and how to restore hope at a time when so much of the news is bleak. I have a doctorate in morbid reflection, she jokes. And in this latest collection of essays, Lamott shows that she also has a gift for compassion, selfless candor, and joyful insight. Anne Lamott joins me today to talk about dusk, night, dawn. That's coming up on Midday after the news. Thanks, Andy. Thanks to everybody who has donated so far in our spring membership campaign. I'm Tom Hall. It is, in fact, midday. Welcome to the program. We begin today with Dr. Letitia Geraza, the health commissioner of the city of Baltimore. The vaccine rollout continues with a new Goucher poll indicating that statewide, African Americans are trying to get vaccinated at rates that are just a few points lower than white Maryland residents. The poll flies in the face of those who contend that the inequity in vaccines between communities of color and white communities has as much to do with reluctance or hesitancy as it does lack of access to vaccines. Dr. Geraza joins us on Zoom. Welcome back. Good to talk to you.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
So I wonder if you could clear up what appears to be something of a misunderstanding between the Hogan administration and the city of Baltimore. A few days ago, the governor was very critical of the health department and critical of the city of Baltimore, saying that it had returned nearly $9 million as well as doses of the vaccine. He told the mayor that he needed to check out his health department. Can you explain what the source of that criticism is and explain your position in the matter?
Sure, sure. So I'll start by talking about the FEMA reimbursement. And I think, you know, some of it is just a general misunderstanding. So the city is applying for FEMA reimbursement on its own. And there's a process that we're going through in the city to request that money directly from FEMA and provide the appropriate justification. So we wanted to, you know, just keep the lines clear as we were making one larger request to FEMA. With regards to the vaccinations, we've not returned any vaccines. Instead, we've actually reallocated or transferred vaccine doses to many clinical partners. From day one, you know, we've said that this was going to be a citywide response, that as a city, we were going to work together to scale up our ability to provide vaccinations to our residents, especially those that are highest risk. So we've been very fortunate to have many healthcare partners in our hospitals, as well as our pharmacies, who serve as additional access points for vaccine. So we're able to transfer or reallocate doses, and then we provide direction as the health department to say, this is the group that's highest need. You know, we want you to focus on our older adults over 65. We want you to help us with senior housing sites. We want to be able to go into the senior housing sites alongside your clinical teams to vaccinate those individuals. So we've been very fortunate to have great partners in this space.
And the responsibility for who gets allocations of vaccine to each jurisdiction lies with the state. But then, to be clear, you're in charge, the health department is in charge of how those vaccines that are allocated to the city of Baltimore then are allocated around the city. So that includes pharmacies, that includes hospitals, that includes your own site that you're running, that includes the mass vaccination sites, I assume. I mean, are you in charge of figuring out where all that stuff goes?
Not exactly. So we as the health department, the local health department, we receive an allocation. And so we are able, with the allocation that is designated to us as the local health department, to say, you know, this 100 doses is going to support educators through our partner at this hospital. We are not responsible or in charge of making decisions around what gets sent to mass vaccination sites and how that's used, nor are we in charge or responsible for what is sent directly to hospitals and pharmacies.
Have you changed your approach to the allocation of the vaccines that you are given as the Baltimore City Health Department to, for example, address the clear and present demonstrable inequity between people of color and people of and white communities in terms of who has actually received the vaccine? There's one estimate that says four times as many white people have gotten it as black folks. Another estimate says three times as many, but either way, it's more people, more white folks than black folks who are getting the vaccine. Can you change your allocation to address that particular issue?
So again, from day one, in addition to this being a citywide collaborative effort, we said that it would be equitable. So as we established our mobile vaccination teams, we established them with equity in mind. We intentionally looked at areas with low vaccination coverage and areas where there's a high density of older adults. So our senior housing sites throughout the city, again, has been a primary focus of the work we're doing with our mobile response team. We've also worked with entities that support residents experiencing homelessness. So likewise, providing them with an allocation and helping them with outreach. We also established early on what we call value team leads. So we are looking at value populations. So that includes our immigrant population, that includes our African-American population, that includes those with disabilities, that includes, again, those that are experiencing homelessness. And so we have designated team leads within the health department that collaborate with our partners in those spaces to make sure that there's education as well as appropriate and equitable vaccination.
Dr. Letitia Giraza joins me. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Dr. Giraza, we are now in phase 1C, as I understand it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so who's eligible for a vaccine now?
Oh, wow. So this is, it's a long list.
But who's been added in the last, you know, the last week or so?
In the last week or so? So I think that there was an addition, and I'm just going to pull it up because the list is long. And I don't have it memorized, but let's.
Oh, that's fair enough.
See. Yep. So specifically, when we're looking at 1C, that's inclusive of all Marylanders over the age of 65, anyone in public safety or healthcare that wasn't included in the earlier phases. So this might include those working in lab services or vaccine manufacturing. This is our food and agricultural production support. Critical manufacturing, the U.S. Postal Service, public mass transit, grocery store employees, veterinarians and support staff, and clergy, as well as other essential support. And then what was added were our cancer patients who are currently in active treatment, those with end-stage renal disease who might require hemodialysis, anyone with COPD or lung disease, solid organ transplant recipients, sickle cell disease patients, and diabetics.
How about teachers? Are teachers being, I'm talking about K through 12 teachers in particular, are they being prioritized at all?
Yeah, so teachers were actually in group 1B. And again, we've worked closely with partners to redistribute vaccine. We also, this week, actually just held pods that were specific to teachers, older adults, and first responders. But again, many of our partners, our hospital partners, have been working with us to help support vaccination of city educators.
So in the efforts that you're making in terms of who you are allocating the health department's allocation to, as well as the state's professed interest in achieving equity when it comes to vaccine distribution, are you confident that the actions that the state now says it's taking and the actions that you continue to take will be able to address the problem of equity when it comes to distribution of the vaccines?
Well, I think we're going to have to all continue to be very intentional, right? Like, I think we saw early on in the pandemic disparities really from jump. And I think if you work in public health, then this wasn't a surprise to you, right? These disparities are ones that have existed for a very long time, and they're attributable to structural and systemic racism, right? So I would certainly hope that we will continue to be intentional in our approach to vaccinating this population, but that when all is said and done, we'll take a step back and look at what policies need to change so that, you know, in 100 years, hopefully, if there is another pandemic, we've already got the things in place that will help us to address that.
Is there anything that you think the state could be doing that they're not doing that would move the needle and make things more equitable quicker?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is always just partnership with the local health departments that are on the ground doing the work. You know, we've seen the state and they are beginning to do some mobile pop-up clinics. We did that work back in the fall around our flu vaccine strategy. So there are many lessons learned from the work we did in the fall that we're applying this time around as well. So just continued partnership with the local health departments, you know, getting an understanding of the work that we're also doing on the ground, you know, trying to deduplicate efforts as much as possible is great.
One of the things we hear from state officials, we continue to hear it, is that one of the reasons that inequity persists between Black and white communities in particular is hesitancy or reluctance in the Black community to receive the vaccine. There is some recent polling that Goucher College did, mm-hmm. It was just released yesterday, showing that 68% of white people say they intend to get the vaccine. 62% of Black people say they intend to get the vaccine. So the differential there is minimal. To what extent do you attribute vaccine hesitancy or reluctance to the inequity? How big of a problem at this juncture do you think it is?
I hear that and I definitely understand that hesitancy is there, but that is not the primary issue right now. Right now, the issue is really equitable access and making sure that we are we're meeting people where they are, right? So one of the things that we did early on was establish our MAP call center. So if you are challenged as an older adult or if you just don't have access to the internet, we set up a call center to really support people being able to call in and pre-register once appointments were available. So they didn't have to navigate multiple online systems or registries. That is one way, I think, to support more equitable access. And so that is the list we're pulling from when we think about older adults who are in need of vaccines.
There are all sorts of different ways that people are parsing the metrics throughout this COVID crisis. And one of them, when it comes to the doses and how they've been allocated by the state, has to do with measuring them as they were allocated per 1,000 residents. And when it's mm-hmm. done that way, Kent County and Dorchester County, two small counties, received more vaccines per 1,000 residents through the month of February than the city of Baltimore, for example. Kent County, 283 doses per 1,000 residents compared to 211 doses per 1,000 residents here in the city. Is this, to some extent, a matter of semantics and metrics? Are we thinking about this? Is everybody on the same page when it comes to how this is being communicated to the public and how people are, in fact, deciding what's fair, what's equitable, what's most efficient in confronting this virus?
Yeah, I think the only thing that I would caution is that when we think about the city's allocation, is I do believe hospital allocations are being included in that number per capita. And Baltimore City has 11 acute care hospitals, so more than any other jurisdiction in the state. And I do believe that what the hospitals received are being counted towards the overall city allocation. I think that's a bit challenging because our hospitals have definitely been great partners with vaccines we've been able to allocate, but they also are responsible for vaccinating their staff who may not live in the city. They're also regional in nature, so they're potentially vaccinating their patients who may not live in the city. So I think that's something to consider, right? How do we consider allocations to hospitals or healthcare systems that are going to support their workforce and their patients versus the allocation that might be coming directly to a city or county? So that's kind of a harder question for me to answer.
Yeah. I mean, has there been any motion on that? Because a number of people, including all three people who preceded you as health commissioner of the city of Baltimore, are on record saying that it's a dumb idea to include the allocation to hospitals in the city's overall allocation number. So that's been on the table now for a week or so. Are you hearing any movement from the state in that they may change the way they're calculating this?
You know, I've not heard any movement, but one of the steps that we have taken is we did update our dashboard on Friday to reflect the overall percentage of vaccines being given in the city to city residents. And right now we're a little below 40%. And I think that's just something we should all be cognizant of. So yes, the city has received, this number of vaccines, but again, how do we hold ourselves accountable for making sure that it goes to city residents?
Dr. Tish the Commish, as she's known on Twitter. Dr. Letitia Geraza is the health commissioner of the city of Baltimore. Dr. Geraza, it's always great to talk to you, and we will speak again soon, I'm sure. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Coming up, the best-selling author Anne Lamott has a new book. It's called Dusk, Night, Dawn, and Anne Lamott joins me to talk about it on the other side of a quick break, and we are going to spend that quick break talking about the importance of being a member of WYPR. Anne Lamott has some important things to say about resilience and coping in these weird and troubled times in this new book. And before we speak with her, Andy Bienstock and I do want to ask you to think about the importance of membership in WYPR. Here's Andy.
Just visit WYPR.org, click the donate link, become a member of WYPR. These last 12 months have been challenging for all of us. The news has been overwhelming. Public radio hasn't shied away from making sure you know the full truth. WYPR has been your trusted source of information about the coronavirus pandemic. We're here to be your reliable source about the vaccine rollout. We are here for you today because listeners like you have been here for us in the past. Pledge online at WYPR.org.